Welcome back to the Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Whew. Bring in the heat, JD. Bring in the heat. Ailish Warfar, JD Bunkus, Blake Murphy. Waiting for our boy, Charles Davis, who is our fourth member of the show. Is he available to talk to? I didn't get to hear if... Oh, no. We're waiting for him. We're waiting for him to pick up our guy. He called Bills Patriots last weekend. And remember when we gave him all that fashion advice, what to wear, how to bundle up, earmuffs, triple layers, balaclava. He just stood there, braved the cold, not an ounce of fabric on him. He looked slim. He looked
okay.
Cold.
Well, he wasn't naked. He had more than an ounce of fabric on him. What Denise and Drumbo was apoplectic that Charles was not dressed warm enough.
I was worried too.
So my mom doesn't like football at all. These are the reasons she tunes into games. She wants to hear Charles Davis.
Mm-hmm.
And this weekend, she bought all the stuff to make those mac and cheese Fruit Loop hot dogs that we talked about the other week.
I'm honestly considering coming to your house. If I thought your mom liked me at all, I'd be there.
My mom has never met you.
But she listens to JD enough that she knows she doesn't like him.
She knows me. Yeah, she knows me. She doesn't like me. I know it hurts.
She's going to make those gross hot dog things?
Yeah, it's about a 90-minute drive.
I bet you they're delicious.
They look awful. Wait, is this the one that was on the A-list a while back that whatever baseball or basketball team was making
it? I think it was Houston Texans.
Oh, the Rockets. It was the Rockets.
Oh, right. So my mom, I put this in the group chat yesterday. My mom sent a picture of hot dogs, Fruit Loops, pre-made, fully cooked bacon and
mac and cheese.
Yeah,
I bet you.
She's so fit. There's no way she eats an ounce of that.
No, she doesn't.
She's gonna do it. She said.
No.
About cheat meals.
Hey, we need a live Instagram live of your mom eating this. Okay.
Yes.
Well, I'm not gonna be there. So I.
Oh.
Like this is not being
making these for you.
No, she's making them for herself and my stepdad and I. Probably
You put it was drive to Drumbo for Sunday's games, team road trip. I thought that meant that you were going to be there.
No, because JD said he wanted them. So I was suggesting he drive to Drumbo.
I see.
Without you. We'll just go without you. Actually, JD and I will go. You stay here in Toronto.
I don't think there's any chance these things are good.
Yeah, I disagree.
Horrible.
I bet you they're so good. I bet you they're because that's just it's one of those things where the you on paper it just seems gross that it has to be good if somebody's making it. Although I love the idea of me taking one bite and being so disappointed and lying to your mom's face, like, oh, so good, and then having to spit it out in my hand and feed it to the cats. But yeah, the reason we're talking about our parents is because they were very disappointed in our next guest.
Yes, our next guest, our fan, our friend, our fourth member of our show, Charles Davis, NFL and CBS color analyst. Morning, Charles. We're a little bit sad today because we saw you braving the cold and you took none of cold weather advice. No hat, no earmuffs, not even a scarf. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling great. I'm feeling as well as I can feel, guys. And just so we're all clear, I did not disappoint everyone and not take your advice. If you go back and look at our shots where it's me and Ian at the open and at halftime, okay. I have a scarf on.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have bundled to the gills underneath. Guys, you wouldn't believe the number of layers. Bib the Michelin Man had nothing on me, okay?
Yeah.
I had three pair of socks. I had boots. I had long johns. I had Vari stretch sweatpants on. And then I had ski pants. I went triple, okay? Then I went with the multiple layers. I had four layers of thermals. Not to mention a zip-up black sweater, and then I had our black jacket. Now, the black jacket was questionable because it's not really built for the cold.
It looked thin.
The only things we had that matched were that. It was thin, and that's what we had that matched. So we decided we would wear that for the open, and then at halftime, except, you know, he got me with the Kurt Warner's warmer. And then half in between, I put on the big parka with the fur lined and the whole deal. So, guys, I'm telling you, I had it all on. The hat, yeah, that one went. I'm sorry about that. But the headset is your earmuffs. So the headset works out fine because it kept my ears really warm. I missed on the hat. I agree on that. But I have to tell you, vanity kicked in. When I saw Ian go no hat, I said, okay, I can't be the hat guy when Ian's going no hat.
You didn't want to mess your hair up, HR.
Vanity got me on that one. Well, with the two or three hairs I have left, A-list, I wanted to make sure that those two or three hairs really look good because there aren't many that are left. But no, vanity got me on that one. They got me. So I apologize for not everything, but I think you really would have been proud of me if you'd seen the entire process.
Okay.
Yeah, believe me, it was a process. Nick Saban would have been very happy. He would have said, oh, good process getting dressed there, Dave. It's good process.
Yeah, made us so happy.
Yeah, we're really pleased now that we know the full makeup of everything. But let's start with that Bills-Patriots game. Obviously, it was one for the ages, just the Josh Allen experience. Did the Bills surprise you or change your view of them with that performance and that utter, just spanking of the Patriots?
Yeah, surprise. I think we all have to use the word surprise to an extent because we saw history, guys. Mm-hmm. 7 offensive possessions, 7 touchdowns. Okay, look, as they say, that doesn't happen every day, but we toss that around so cavalierly. Mm. Let's analyze that again. 7 touchdowns on 7 possessions in a playoff game. Then throw in the fact that it was 6 degrees at kickoff, minus whatever with wind chill. I don't care that they're the Buffalo Bills. I don't care anyone playing in that is not supposed to go down like that, to be that efficient, to be that strong, to be that dominating throughout a ball game. So we saw history happen because that does, no one is not on record. We haven't had that before, let alone in a playoff game. So did it change my view of them? No, it just elevated my view of them. I thought they were going to be good going into the playoffs. That wasn't the issue. Now when you look at what they did, I don't expect them to go 7 for 7 every game. That's folly. But are they good enough to do what they wanted in preseason and accomplish their goals? Absolutely, because the defense is still playing at a high level. But I still think that the game turned. The game wasn't won, but it turned when Micah Hyde made that interception on the first possession for New England. So that was one of the better plays I've seen in a long, long time. I mean, that was baseball for me. That was Willie Mays. That was Gary Pettis. That was Ken Griffey Jr. going to the wall and going up and pulling that thing back. That was just flat out amazing. And, I know someone questioned whether the throw was good. The throw was good. It was a good throw. He just made a better play. Hmm.
Yeah, so if I'm going to stick with Ailish's theme of surprise, I don't think it would surprise anyone if the Bills won against the Chiefs, given how good they performed last week. But would it surprise you if they thumped them? Because I think that's on the table.
Oh, that's a good question. We saw the last true thumping of Kansas City, meaning we were in Nashville and they played Tennessee. And at the time, the Kansas City was 3-3 going into that game and were struggling a little bit. But the final score was 27-3. And I think it was 27-0 at the half. I mean, they were just pounding them. So we saw that thumping. Now, we haven't seen anything close to that since that time. Kansas City got their legs under them and became Kansas City for the most part again. But if they play at that level, I think that they can set a pace that Kansas City is quote-unquote used to playing at. But I don't know if they're used to playing at it this season, meaning the way Kansas City has played lately, they've gotten so used to teams slowing them down a little bit and then striking when the opportunity hits. Buffalo has not let people didn't slow them down. I mean, they just decided to set the pace themselves. So thumping, it'd be a little bit of a surprise, but I see where you're going with that, and I don't discount it. I absolutely don't. But I do think that we all have to keep in mind, one more time, you have to say it to yourself, 7 offensive possessions, 7 touchdowns. When will you see that again? Okay, you don't do that in practice against the scrub team. Okay, that's just one of the most unusual things I've seen. And it's not because New England laid down. It's because Buffalo was so incredible. But at the same time, can you maintain that type of a pace in NFL games? I would say the answer would be no. I would not say that anyone's going to do that game in and game out. But can they play at a high rate? Absolutely, because that's where they are right now. So, yeah, I listen, Buffalo going in and winning, but should not surprise anyone. Thumping, that'd be a little bit of a surprise, yes.
Yeah, of course. And we're talking about Patrick Mahomes, and there's this big part of me that I keep looking at these matchups this weekend, Charles, and everything, I keep coming back to the quarterbacks and all of them, and I'm like, is Jimmy Garoppolo really going to beat Aaron Rodgers the way he's playing right now? Is Patrick Mahomes really going to go out like this? Is he going to lose to the Buffalo Bills twice? And am I really just, you know, overlooking Mahomes, and have we overlooked the Chiefs and all these different things? I really love that, one, the Bills designed their season to beat the Chiefs, and that this is, again, another identity game for them where they're going, you know, yeah, what? We have the secondary for this. We have the toughness for this. We have a quarterback who's been the better rushing quarterback than anybody else, including Lamar Jackson this year, and who I just don't think that the Chiefs have answers for when plays break down. Like, you saw some of the ways that Allen was just able to slough off tackles. Like, there was that one Barrymore player in that New England game, and I know he was injured, but my God, it was just like, that's a defensive tackle, and Allen treated him like he was a 5'6" defensive back, like, trying to tackle a quarterback. Like, it was embarrassing.
Yeah.
And so what I find most curious about this game is that are the Bills going to be able to just impose their will physically on this team? I'm curious what you think it is. If you're looking at a singular matchup when it comes to this game, a singular story in this game that you think is going to tell us the final tale, what is it to you?
Well, let's start with Josh Allen real quick before I get to what I think the singular matchup is. Isn't it interesting that in all aspects of our world, and I don't mean to go all Hakuna Matata here, but Big Ben is retiring, right? What we saw from Josh Allen is Big Ben young with way more speed and elusiveness as a runner, but the ability to shake off big people and let them hit the ground and still complete passes downfield. That's what you're talking about, the way he ran to Christian Barmore, for a great example. Now, for me, the biggest matchup is going to be Tyreek Hill for Kansas City for two reasons. Number one, his ability to get downfield or make a catch and make a move and get downfield after the catch that can shred a defense. Will Buffalo have answers for that as they've had before? And two, he's had a propensity for dropping the football this year. Okay, there have been a lot of drops on plays that should have been bigger and broader. I don't think Kansas City can afford to miss opportunities in this game. When you're clearly the dominant team and the better team, you can go a game where your top receiver might drop two or three and that big play, we'll come back and we'll get it later. Against Buffalo, if you don't take advantage of that play right then and there, that could haunt you because you might not get another opportunity. That's why I'm looking at Hill, because during the time they struggled this year, go back and pop on the tape, go back and check the stats, every ball game it felt like, including the Buffalo game. You remember the Micah Hyde interception that was returned for a touchdown? Do you remember how it started?
Mm-hmm.
Ball came off the hands of Tyreek Hill, a ball that he should have caught. Ball goes off his hands, Hyde takes it, goes pick six, helps change the course of the game. That's why I look at him. That's a big, big indicator for Kansas City, because any opportunity wasted against Buffalo, I think they're in trouble then. I mean, you have a coach say it all the time. A lost opportunity is never regained. And I think he used to wake up in the morning and just say it to himself, and I think he really liked it. So we heard it 100,000 times throughout the course of the season. But in this case, I think he's pretty accurate.
So I want to move on to the Niners-Green Bay Packers game, because it's one of the most interesting storylines for me is what happens to Aaron Rodgers depending on this game. So let's say they win, they go to the Super Bowl, yeah, and he wins another Super Bowl. Do you think that means he's more likely to stay with the team, or is it, you know, they lose, and does he want to get out? Does he want to stay and redeem himself? I'm very curious how you think this plays out. You know, if there's something that'll keep him there or something that'll get him to leave even more so.
Hey, listen, I'm at the stage now where unless something happens behind the scenes with him in the front office that's crazier than what we've seen throughout the last few years,
mm-hmm,
I'm feeling like he's more leaning towards staying.
Okay.
Like, win or lose. He's got a great rapport now with his head coach, Matt LaFleur. Remember, he was very skeptical when they hired him. Remember how much he challenged him right out of the gate, being Aaron Rodgers, and flexed with the whole idea, I can change plays when I want to. And LaFleur is like, our system's not built for that. And Aaron's like, okay, I still got to change plays. And, you know, they went back and forth trying to establish. And Matt LaFleur had to be strong during that time frame, or Aaron would have totally overrun him. And somehow they've reached detente, and I think more. I feel like there's a good relationship there. And Aaron has respect for him and how we run offense. I could pull tapes for you from the last years of Aaron with Mike McCarthy, where every snap that he took, it felt like he decided to improvise before the play even really began. Now watch him in the pocket. He takes it. There's a rhythm to what he's doing. There's a time factor. You know, he's on time with throws. It just looks more the part. And since that time, he's going to win his second MVP this year. I think he's got everything going the way that he wants to. He's got a defense playing better than it's ever played. And when we start talking about all the places he could land, a lot of coaching shakeup since that time. Denver was one that was always discussed because of Vic Fangio's defense. Well, Vic's not there anymore. Who's going to be the new coach? Just go on down the line, the places that possibly could do this, where you're going to plug in a 38-year-old quarterback who's a top-level guy, but that means you're trying to win right here, right now, like Peyton Manning going to Denver, right? Can you do that? I think that Aaron's in a better spot in Green Bay than anywhere else, and now that all the you-know-what has calmed down, Ailish, and guys, I just think he would probably lean more towards staying where he is as opposed to going somewhere else. Now, if they win it all, he may have that little itch that says, I want it again here. Let me go somewhere else and show him just how great I am and win it somewhere else. Like Peyton went to Denver and won it. Maybe, but right now, if you were asking me to put anything down, JD, you're in charge of my money, so if I'm putting anything down, it's going to be on Aaron staying in Green Bay.
Okay, well, yeah, I'm definitely betting on Aaron standing in Green Bay. I kind of thought that this season was the we've moved past that with Aaron Rodgers now, like for all the reasons that you just outlined. But when it comes to my money this weekend, it's coming down to partially your answer on this. Where do you see the biggest advantage offensively? Is it Aaron Rodgers against that Niners secondary that's been susceptible to big plays, or is that Niners offensive line and that run game that now has Deebo Samuel and Mitchell, who both just looked phenomenal last week, and that physical front against Green Bay's sort of spotty run defense? Like, let's be honest, that's been a hole for them for a bunch of different seasons, right? Like, this is not a new problem for Green Bay.
Right. No, I would agree. It's not a new problem. It's better than it's been, but that doesn't mean it's fixed. I think that's where we're going with this one. Better, but doesn't mean it's fixed. Now, can Elijah Mitchell and Deebo Samuel run them into submission? Potentially. But I also think that they have a few players on that second level, and Rashawn Gary has had a monster year for them. He's played really well. I think that things are a little bit better for Green Bay, so I like the advantage of Rodgers versus their secondary more, especially because the game's in Green Bay. Can San Francisco run them out of it? Obviously, yes. That's where the strategy would be, and Kyle Shanahan has shown as a play caller, he's egoless, which means he's not going to just run plays to show you that he designed them. He's going to run plays that if they're working, he will continue to run them. Remember their Super Bowl run? Where it was a Garoppolo through it, what, less than 10 times twice in the playoffs, and they went to the Super Bowl? If it's there, Kyle Shanahan will do that. I don't think it'll be there quite to that level against Green Bay. And that's why I give Rodgers a little bit of an advantage there. The other part of it is, at some point during the game, Jimmy Garoppolo's got to show that he won't make a Jimmy G play. That Cowboys game was dead and over. The game was buried. And he made a Jimmy G play, and the door opened, and we had that sprint to the finish. Now, Dallas will be talking forever about, well, we like the play, and Dak did the right thing. They screwed it up. That is essentially what it comes down to. But they never would have been in that position if Jimmy Garoppolo didn't make one of those plays. And that's where you got to sit. San Francisco's got to see him not do that. Because if he doesn't, they're in this thing the whole way. If he does, I think it could flip on Green Bay's side pretty well. And right now, we don't have the evidence that he won't make one of those plays. Because it feels like he does it every single game.
Charles, you used the word rhythm a little earlier, and the team whose rhythm I'm most curious about this weekend is the Tennessee Titans. Not only are they coming off of the bye week as the number one seed, they're going to try to work Derrick Henry back into the mix. They've also played more players just on their roster this season than anyone else because of injuries. And I think it says a lot about their coaching staff and a lot about the quality of the team that they were able to grab the one seed with all of that. But do you worry a little bit about this team's been off a bit now? They're trying to work Henry back in. Guys have been in and out of the lineup. How comfortable are you with the Titans picking up where they left off this weekend?
I'm a lot more comfortable with them because of their style of play. Like, I mean, what they like to do is everything you just described. And I don't worry as much about teams' rhythm when they are a running culture team. Because as Henry works his way back in, if for some reason it is not working and he's a little bit – tentative is the wrong word, but let's say he can't get the same power and explosion and burst and he won't get as many carries. Deontay Foreman and Dontrell Hilliard have filled in quite well. When you go back and look through the season, all their numbers with Derrick Henry, they average about 147 yards a game on the ground. Without Derrick Henry, they average about 13 yards a game less on the ground. The difference, for the most part, not just 13 yards, it's been the type of explosive runs. Okay, Derrick Henry provides those for you, the 10, the 15, the 20, and more, where he just beats people up and gets downfield. The other guys can provide them, but not at the same rate. But at the same time, it still helps control the clock, still helps control the ball, helps their defense out a lot. That's who Tennessee is. I don't worry about that as much, and I do believe them getting that open week. Some teams need that open week. They needed it. You mentioned the 91 players used, which is an NFL record. Now, not all of that was due to injury, a decent portion, but John Robinson, general manager, loves to churn roster as well. And so they will bring guys in, they will move guys around, they will do things. That added to the number. Where you got to look at is where the key ones. And for him, Deontay Foreman and Dontrell Hilliard, if anyone had them before the season as kind of saviors of the Tennessee Titans running game when Derrick Henry got hurt, you need to call all of us and tell us what your secrets are. John Robinson and his scouting staff had those guys, brought them in, made it work. But remember, they had to go through the trial and error, too, because you remember who they brought in first, don't you? Adrian Peterson. Everyone was still seduced by the Adrian Peterson thing. I do believe that's pretty much over at this point. That's a wonderful career, and it's time for him to start working on his Hall of Fame speech, in my opinion. But he just doesn't want to quit playing, and I get that. But at the same time, these guys were so much better. Younger, more explosive, better players, et cetera, at this stage. Would they ever be Adrian Peterson at his peak? No, of course not. He's one of the all-time great backs he's ever been. But that's why I don't think Tennessee, I'm not worried about their rhythm. And for the last game of the season, they got all their starters back on offensive line. And they played throughout against Houston. And that was huge for them to get that continuity back. So I think that this week off was wonderful for Tennessee. I don't worry about any of that. I don't worry about their rhythm. I think their rhythm would be fine. In fact, I think it'll be better for Ryan Tannehill, a quarterback, to have all those people back. Because now you've added Julio Jones back in. You've added A.J. Brown. And they get to actually work in practice. They don't just show up for the game. So, again, your word rhythm, timing, all those things come into play that Tannehill gets in practice that he never really got. Go back to the beginning of the season. Julio Jones was hurt in training camp. A.J. Brown's been dinged throughout. Their time in practice is full-time. Here's the throws I'm going to make. Here's how I read you. It's been almost negligible. These last 2 weeks have been the most time they've had together the entire season, and I think that bodes well for them in the playoffs.
So, Charles, let's hit on every game here. This Tampa Bay game, I'm worried that there might be too much atrophy. Like, Tristan Wirfs looks like a long shot to play. Ryan Jensen could not have participated if they did a walkthrough. You look at Leonard Fournette is still banged up. Sean Murphy Bunting is too banged up. I'm more worried about the offensive line, though. Like, do you think that they're going to be able to win this game with a 44-year-old quarterback who had less time in the pocket last week than any other quarterback in the NFL against Aaron Donald, Von Miller in that front seven?
If that front seven plays like they did against Arizona versus the team people were anticipating playing, if, as you noted, Wirfs can't go and all the other guys are beat up front, I think that's a hard slog for them. Because as great as Tom Brady is, that time in the pocket is valuable for him. Where he buys time is just very smart, deft slide steps. You know, he's not going to break pocket and get out there and run very often, although, you know, I'm sure he'll be sending me an Instagram video again showing him running, 5 yards like it was 50. Okay, yeah. He's very good at doing it. He knows
hurdling
how to
hurdling a guy that's laying
but
on the ground.
But you know the general rule. Hurdling guys and all that. But you know the general rule. That's not what his game is. So if Donald can break pressure inside and bring that and then Von Miller off the edge, that could make for a long afternoon. Now, remember, Bruce Arians, Byron Leftwich is play callers and designers. Brady is a quarterback who also is a play caller and a designer. They will have stuff in their arsenal hoping to combat that. How quickly can he get the ball out of his hands? Will the screen game be a part of it? Because you know the Rams would be very eager to get after him. How do you neutralize Jalen Ramsey, even if you're not throwing the ball in his area? Meaning he's going to take one of the top receivers. Okay, great. I'm going to take him and run him over here. Can someone else step up during that time? I'm not going to underestimate those guys on that side of the ball. But I tell you, what you pointed out makes it a very difficult proposition if the Rams pass rush is pumped up. And remember, when they first got Von Miller, how many games did we go before we thought that move paid dividends? It took a while. But now he looks pretty locked in, doesn't he? He was terrific against Arizona. So point well taken, but I'm not going to underestimate Tampa Bay's ability to come up with things that don't make it very easy for the Rams to get to Tom Brady.
Well, Charles, enjoy the games this weekend. We're looking forward to catching up with you next week and talking about all these exciting games that we're gonna see this weekend. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Yeah, thanks. And you guys were awfully kind because you know that I'm going to miss this weekend because I got my COVID diagnosis and it's going to drive me berserk. And it's very kind of you, but I didn't want you to go without having it, because people say, how do you talk to him and not have that happen? Well, guys, I'm okay. I feel fine. I'm going to drive home. I'm going to be okay. And it just hurts that I won't be able to do this last game with my crew. But it's going to be a terrific game. I can't wait to watch this one go, Cincinnati and Tennessee. You guys be good. Take care of yourselves. Yeah. And we'll talk next week.
We will. And if you want to just call me and watch the games and give me your analysis as well,
we can FaceTime.
Yeah, like we'll patch you in. I will happily have you break down every play for me as I'm watching it. I will mute the Cincinnati game, and I will just listen to your analysis. I'll sit there. I'll put it on with my friends. And, if you're bored, Charles, that's offer stands. You know, offer's always on the table. I will mute out of respect to you.
You guys are the best. If I was past my 5 days, I'd just come up to Toronto, and we'd all just hang out and do it, okay? We'd all just grab a place, grab some food, grab some drink, turn it on the big screen, okay? I just wish I was past the 5 days. You guys take care of yourselves, okay?
See you, Charles. Be well.
You too.
Man.
Rest up, Charles. Oh, our guy. Mm-hmm. I hope he's okay.
He is.
He's going to – I know. I'm just going to miss his little face on the TV, you know?
Yeah.
His little voice. I can't wait to talk to him already next week.
Yeah, no, he's the best. And I loved some of the analysis this week. And I love Charles because we have him on at 7 before we do Wake and Rake at 8:30. And I sneakily use some of my questions as, hey, help me tell this.
That's true.
Like, help me solidify this bet. So now, as a preview for later in the show, the bets are locked in. The bets are locked in. The bets are locked in.
So, all right, it's time for Charles to get some rest. It's time for JD to lock those bets in. It's time for something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats. And of course, guys, I had to go this direction. This has been the season of the short dog. Short road underdogs have covered at almost a two-thirds clip. Short road underdogs were as successful this season as the Wake and Rake's been so far. That's how good short road dogs were during the NFL season. Every game this week qualifies. This is actually tied for the shortest total spread in a playoff week ever. Those four games with a combined spread of only 13.5 points ties 1971 for the smallest ever, and significantly lower than anything in the last couple years. So I pulled the data to see if there's a short road dog element to playoff betting. And obviously there's a lot more short road dogs in the playoffs because the teams are good and close and things like that. Of the 469 playoff games that there's spread data available for.
That you looked at all of them.
Yeah. I looked at every box score, every game. No, there were 172 road underdogs that fit this week's spread range of 2 to 5.5. The cover rate was exactly 50.0%.
Oh, I
so there is not
swing
a
it to like 90%.
Element. I know. No. And it even narrowing the time to more recent years, it gets a couple games over 500, but that's it. 39.5% rate of winning outright though. So what that means is that if you're going the road dog side and you want to get the points, take a look at the money line value, because 4 out of 5 of those short road dogs that covered also won.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's something to chew on as you look at your bets. If you like a dog this weekend, maybe go all the way with them.
If you parlay all of the money line underdogs, it's plus 3,656. Just $5, baby.
Yeah. You know what?
We're going to have a lesson on probability one time.
But I was just going to say, this is actually one of my favorite things ever because Ailish is now, I have Ailish and I have one other friend that does this where they go, if you take all these random shots, do you know what the odds
one
are?
Will
They're
hit.
Plus. They're 85-1. I'm like, yeah, it's 85-1. Like, why are you saying, like, you only show me the, like, what you would win money and not the actual reason why you're going to win that money. That's the hilarious. I love that always. That's the best thing. But anyways, yes, just $5. Might be worth it. And guess what? Blakey, you and Charles both, you know, locking in the old, is ready to chuck some ducks. Might be
providing context on the slate. I'm not telling you where to go. We saved that for 8:30 with Cool Bet Chris.
I'm just providing some context for some teases of, hey, maybe, there's a couple short dogs that I love as money line picks this week.
There you go. Short dogs on the money line, something that could bear fruit. What didn't bear fruit last time around was the Raptors every game parlay that JD developed. Let's take a break.
I mean, it just didn't when I shared it the first. Yeah. I didn't share. Yeah. It worked. And then I didn't share. It did share and it lost. And that's the way it goes. It's always the way the cookie crumbles. Yeah.
Let's take a break and then let's see where we're at on the Raptors. The Raptors play the Wizards tonight. Also some Canadian NCAA basketball news that we can maybe get to. We've got a great second half, too. We've got Steve Dangle coming on at 8, our Wake and Break segment with Cool Bet Chris at 8:30, and Ariel Helwani coming on to talk Bills and the UFC 270 at 9:30. So stick around for all that. Subscribe to the podcast if you're not going to be live on radio for those segments. Just subscribe anyway. Just help us out. We're going to talk Raptors coming up next on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Blake Murphy, Taylor Forfar, JD Bunkus, Kendrick Lamar, Dr. Dre. Make sure to check out later when we'll share the Friday Oxcord link on Spotify so you can check out all the songs JD's been playing. If you're listening on the podcast and don't hear them, you can find them that way. If you're listening on the radio and want to know what the songs are, dive in deeper, you can go there. Either way, go subscribe to the Fan Morning Show as well. Great review, all that good stuff.
Absolutely, do all those things. We'll all share it on our Instagram stories later today. Make sure you follow there. In 2022, it's like, oh, we don't have things to look forward to because they might take everything away from us and it might be a hellscape, continue to be blah, blah, blah. At least we have a new Kendrick Lamar album that is promised to us. Like, finally. So I was a big fan of the band Tool growing up. I still am a big fan of the band Tool, but it's just... that was the same thing. Tool would release an album like every decade, essentially. They took their time, all right? It was like no rushing Maynard. They were not... Tool is an amazing band, not prolific in terms of just the releasing of songs. That has become Kendrick in my life, where I go, whenever you're ready, sir, whenever you're ready to give me an album, I'll just take it. But
him
do you
and
know
Frank
what year
Ocean.
Damn came out?
We'll just wait forever.
The thing is, I've just... Frank Ocean has never hit with me that way. It's like, I respect the music, I like the music, but it's never something that I'm, like, dying for. Kendrick Lamar is in my Mount Rushmore of artists in my lifetime. Like, that is one of my favorites ever in anything. Like, I actually think that if he drops another just start-to-finish amazing album, which I believe that he will, that he's going to have a very, very strong case for the GOAT argument. Like, that's what we're talking about here with Kendrick. Like,
yeah,
he's on my Mount Rushmore already, but he's one album away.
Yeah, it's an impossible run of stuff, right? Where, like, even as far back as Section 80, but let's take it from Good Kid, Mad City forward.
I know.
For when he was kind of on the more mainstream consciousness. But to go Good Kid, Mad City to Pimp a Butterfly and Damn, three in a row, with Untitled Unmastered mixed in, and that Black Panther album that was, like, on a ton of, like, best of lists in 2018 that he kind of curated and led the way on. It's a remarkable run.
that three
subscribe
album run.
Subscribe to Columbia House Party. Subscribe.
Yeah. No, but
to
that three album run is as good as any three album run in the history of any band, any rapper, anything. Like, find me as good of a three album run. That's a Pantheon run. Like, that's three no skip albums in a row.
Yeah, that's hard to do. That's hard to do. What's maybe not hard to do lately? Beat the Washington Wizards. Raptors are going to try to do that tonight. The Washington Wizards, who started the season a piping hot 10-3, and I was like, oh no, I was wrong on them. They've cratered. They've come back down to earth dramatically. They've gone 13-19 since then. They have actually turned it around a little bit the last couple games. They've won four of their last six. Not a believer here. Not a big Washington Wizards guy. The Toronto Raptors are there tonight to close out a five-game road trip. The big storyline in this one, if Nick Nurse finally decides to play an eighth player, is Rui Hachimura and Yuta Watanabe have still never played against each other. They've been kind of orbiting each other their entire time in the NBA. This is a huge, huge matchup to Japanese basketball fans. We have some Japanese regulars around the Raptors beat because Yuta and Rui are such big stories there. My guy Takeshi Shibata has been waiting for this game forever. They've been in the league 3 years together and still haven't got to play head-to-head because of injuries or Yuta being in the G League when he was in Memphis or COVID. They're finally both healthy for the first time tonight. It's a huge deal to Japanese basketball fans. If Yuta Watanabe rides the bench for another DNP tonight, I am going to be very upset, and I will be on the shallow end of how upset some people are that were robbed of Rui Yuta again. Sorry, came undone.
Yeah, I do get it for those fans, and I hope they get what they want. I'm more looking at it just through the lens of I think Yuta Watanabe should be playing right now, period. Yeah. Like, I just own
someone has to.
Yeah, that's it. Is I know, but someone has to. But to me, if I'm Nick Nurse, I'm just playing two other guys right now, and it's Malachi Flynn and it's Yuta Watanabe. I don't really understand. Like, to me, it's just please trade Malachi Flynn. Please, like, make me just stop seeing him on the bench because I just hate the reminder of the amount of minutes Fred is playing every night and having a guy that you took in the first round that you compared to Fred. It's that you won't even give 6 minutes to, you know? You won't even give Fred a blow and let this kid try to figure himself out at any point at the NBA level. Like, it's depressing to me. And with Yuta Watanabe, I've just seen enough minutes from him that I go, oh, yeah, you're an NBA player, that I don't understand the complete abandonment of him. So, yes, do I hope Japanese fans end up getting some of these minutes together? Oh, sure, but I don't really care. Like, I'm sorry, I don't really care. I just want to see the Raptors thrive and succeed. I will say this. Like, I don't know how much time we're going to get to it in the Wake and Rake. I think the Raptors being underdogs in this game is stupid. I think that they're going to kick their teeth in. Like, I don't think that the Wizards are as good as the Raptors are. If I'm doing the, like, who has the best players on the floor, who has the guys I'm most confident in, I think the Raptors have four of the best five players in this game. Certainly four of the best six. And so, yeah, I'm rolling with the Raps tonight.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to play the prop games when they come up, and we could talk about that a little bit in the Wake and Rake, maybe, or at 9 o'clock. Your guy Daniel Gafford is on the other side, so maybe there's a block prop play there. Although his role has been minimized a lot since Thomas Bryant returned.
Unit on Jared Allen to get two blocks and him sitting on one from the first quarter on,
Mobley gets two. I put it on both of them for two blocks in that game,
yeah.
And it was the odd. How you guys tease me for middling. It's like, obviously both those guys could get two blocks, but I was like, one of them will get two blocks. And the odds were so small when you had the two of them together, I made like a buck on it. anyway, so I want to ask you guys this, because the Raptors have two games this weekend. They're at the Wizards tonight, and then they play a struggling Portland Trailblazers team back at home on Sunday, their first home game in forever. Portland is another team that's cratering. Dame's out indefinitely. Larry Nance Jr. is still on his, like, not there. Norman Powell's been out. They got Anthony Simons and CJ McCollum back, but there's a long injury list here for Portland. What I want to know from you guys is we had these two kind of distinct stretches for the Raptors of late. They have this big winning streak against bad and banged up teams, and then they've had this streak of playing good teams really close. And they beat Milwaukee, but they lost the rest of them. They lost a close one to Dallas. They lost a close one to Phoenix. So there have been some kind of feel-good losses in the mix. Does all of that get thrown out for you if the Raptors don't go 2-0 against these weaker teams this weekend?
It depends. It depends on the strategy, though, still. Like, I'm still not sure what Nick Nurse's strategy is going into this. If they beat these teams 2-0 and it's still with the same, what, six people playing, like, I want to see what this team can be with a couple other people in the rotation. Like, I think that that's an important side note for me when I'm evaluating this. Just like we talked about, what's it going to take for the Leafs to actually have a good win? I think that those are little asterisks that I want to see when we go into this game. Obviously, it'd be nice for them to get a win, but it'd also be nice for them to spread the wealth a bit and let some other players play. That's what I'm probably most intrigued about this weekend. Yeah, I don't know if it's just down to winning. It's kind of down to the spread of how these players can, you know, like, I just don't want to see Fred VanVleet play the entire game again. I think some help needs to be assisted to him.
Six straight games, Fred and Pascal have played 38 or more minutes. It's
like, I'd like to see them win without that being the case, is my comment.
Yeah, but I don't think they can win without that being the case, which is the problem. So that's why, like, listen, we've done a lot of criticizing of Nick Nurse as of late, but here's what I'm not going to criticize him on. If, like, when it comes to trying to win individual games, this is obviously the strategy that they have to deploy because everybody on their bench sucks, right? Like, they're down Gary Trent Jr. Like, we're doing this thing about Utah and Malachi. I'm saying, sure, I'd like to see those guys play, but I'm talking about giving them, I think I said 6 minutes, like seven minutes. Yeah. I'm trying to find little fringy minutes for these guys. Right. I'm not asking them to play 15 minutes a game here. Like, they're not able to do that. I keep trying to say this, and I'm sort of, you know, dancing around it to a certain degree. And I think that the Raptors deserve a lot of credit for the pick of Scottie Barnes because it was a bold pick, and it's one that went against convention and has really, really, really worked out. But to me, the rest of their offseason has been pretty brutal. Like, the Gary Trent contract is horrific. Like, it is. I'm sorry. It's a really bad contract. I don't understand how they ended up in that place where you're giving such a young player so much money on such short term after you had just traded for him. And I also look at this bench and say, this sucks. You guys did a bad job drafting Malachi Flynn. I don't care if we think he could be better somewhere else. It's a bad draft pick if he can't even play 1 minute. You don't have a single guy on the bench that you're going to be end up playing. You gave Kem Birch a bad contract, and you made a Kyle Lowry deal that looks bad, like really bad. You got back a terrible Goran Dragic headache and Precious Achiuwa, who right now looks like somebody that you couldn't get a late first-round pick for if you begged and pleaded. So it's kind of the undertone of this entire season for me is just your core is great, but everything around it stinks. And now there's a little bit of urgency going into this deadline and into this offseason of, hey, Masai, like, let's see some fastballs again. Hey, Bobby Webster, like, let's see some fastballs again with this organization. A lot of misses. A lot of misses.
They don't even have to be big misses, right? Like, I don't feel as extremely as you do about a couple of those points, but it's, you know, the Raptors got to the position they were in to make the Kawhi trade because they kept stacking little victories and little edges. You win this trade by a bit. You win this trade by a bit. You get second round value out of an undrafted guy. You get first round value out of a second round pick. It's all those little wins that add up. And so I don't feel as strongly as you that they've been egregious mistakes, some of the ones you outlined, but the little victories haven't been there. Even someone like Utah, who last year, you know, the story was, hey, you turned a training camp invite into a guy who could be your 10th man. And there hasn't been someone like that clicked this year. Ailish, you had something else for us?
No. I just was curious on the answer to the question that you asked us. If, you know, if they go 2-0, are you happy?
I'm never happy with the Toronto Raptors. It's a constant thing. I'm the, like, the Leaf fan equivalent with this team. But no, I think, look, we're not far out from the trade deadline. It's 3 weeks from yesterday. There needs to be proof of concept here, right? Like you've won, you've played better, sure, but you've lost four of your last five, and you're hovering around that playing game. And what was the big quote last year from Masai? Playing for what? I'm not saying that making the play-in is a negative, and I'm certainly not suggesting, like, their path to bottoming out at this point in the season is almost impossible. Like, you'd need to sit Fred and Pascal down just, like, permanently, which is not a wise thing to do for a lot of reasons. But yeah, you want to see some W's here. You want to Washington, Portland, the first bad teams you've played in a while other than Detroit. You want to get some of those wins back. You look ahead, Charlotte, a team that's roughly in your tier but maybe a little better than you. You should want that game. Chicago, who have now lost Lonzo Ball and Zach LaVine and Patrick Williams and Derek Jones Jr., they're at the top of the East. They're one of the teams that could start sliding if you want to get out of the play-in bracket. And then you've got Miami and Atlanta, and Miami again. Actually, they have six straight games against only Chicago, Miami, and Atlanta. They just play all those teams over and over again. But these are all teams either around your tier in the Eastern Conference or that you want to show yourself that you can be competitive with if you're going to make the playoffs. So I think, yeah, there's an urgency to, like I said, the you need to show that this group can win games and can string some together, and it's not just, hey, we're back to being the annoying, plucky team that's hard to beat. So I think it's a big weekend for them. I think it's a big stretch in general between now and the trade deadline where almost every team they play, every team but one that they play between now and the trade deadline fancies themselves a playoff or play-in team. But none of them are elite except for maybe the Miami Heat. So, yeah, I'm watching closely. One other note, if I may, before we take a break, and it's just something producer Daniele and I talked about yesterday. It's just something to put on your radar as we head toward March Madness here. Shaedon Sharpe got approved to reclassify for the 2022 NBA draft. He's at Kentucky right now. He got like his clearance from high school to join Kentucky midseason. He hasn't played yet, but all eyes on Kentucky if this guy takes the court between now and March Madness, and especially March Madness, because Shaedon Sharpe has the potential to be the next Canadian to be drafted in the top five, especially if he declares this year, which is a weaker draft at the top than 2023. So I know that there are some people who don't love Kentucky. We're back on Kentucky. This is Jamal Murray part two. Shaedon Sharpe, a guy to watch heading into March Madness.